today on Vox Talks Economics, do female experts face an authority gap? Welcome to Vox Talks Economics from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. My name is Tim Phillips. Every week we bring you the best new research in economics, so remember, follow us. And you'll find us on Instagram as well, at Vox Talks Economics. Does the public take more notice of the opinions of male or female economists? Sarah Smith at the University of Bristol, CEPR Fellow, of course, recently conducted an experiment about which experts are more likely to influence public opinion and how the strength of their impact depends on what we know about those experts. And she joins me now. Sarah, welcome back to Vox Talks Economics.
Hi, Tim. Yeah, nice to be chatting to you.
Now, Sarah, we hear regularly from economists in the media at the moment comment on tariffs, immigration, inflation, lots of other topics. Does our past evidence suggest that these expert opinions will actually affect public opinion?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. So there have been some academic studies looking at whether economist opinions influence members of the public. But the way those expert opinions were presented was as what the majority of economists thought. So ask members of the public to give their opinion, you tell them what most economic experts think. And actually, that way of presenting economist opinions doesn't seem to have any effect on how the public thinks about different topics. Possibly because, you know, like economists are pretty famous for having two opinions, you know, disagreeing on things.
Yep.
Suggesting that only most economists have an opinion suggests that either opinion is supported by, you know, at least some economists. In our experiment, we presented the economist opinions a little bit differently. And we just showed members of the public the opinion of a single economist. So there was a picture of an economist, and the members of the public got to see what the opinion of that individual economist was. And we did actually find that seeing economists' opinion in that way did have an influence on the public's opinion on different topics. It wasn't always the case. So we were asking opinions about a wide variety of different topics. So everything from the effect of taxes on junk food to the trade-off between climate change and economic growth, to fiscal policy making, to financial regulation. We did the experiments a year or so ago, things that were quite topical at the time, like greedflation, whether companies using increases in prices to drive up their profit. And actually what was interesting was greedflation was one example where the public were not persuaded by the economist opinion.
Wow.
So there are two reasons for that. One, I think because even without seeing an economist opinion, the public were pretty sure what they thought about that issue. They were pretty convinced that part of the reason for high inflation was that companies were driving up their profits, using the fact that prices are rising in general to drive them up further and make more money themselves. The public had a strong opinion on that. And public opinion is quite different from how economists think on this issue. So economists think that prices go up, it's supply and demand, and it's not necessarily the case that are using this as an opportunity to increase their profits. And I think actually most of the evidence is that firms didn't increase their profits during this time. So there's sort of two things about this. The public and economists actually think differently on these two topics, and the public were already pretty certain in their views on this topic. And so that was the one case where we found whatever the economists had to say on the issue, it wasn't going to affect what the public thought. But in most other cases, we did find significant effect of what the economists thought on what the members of the public thought. So I guess there are some reflections. Brexit, for example, where you know, Michael Gove famously declared we'd have enough of experts. But there again, it was quite different because the public were being presented with two different views from experts. So I think a poll suggested that like 95% of UK economists had a clear view that Brexit was going to be bad for the economy. But the BBC, with its anti-bias mission, always presented two sides. So the public could pick the economist to confirm the beliefs they already held. I don't think that was necessarily a true test of whether economists could influence the public because the media were presenting them with both sides. So I think the lesson is, yes, economists can influence the public. It depends on the issue and what the members of the public think to start with. And it also depends very much on how the views of the economists presented to the public. It was interesting to see, but also it was quite nice to know that we do have some role to play on many topics in terms of shaping public opinion.
Yeah, now we're talking about how people pick the economist they want to believe, I suppose, today as well. And we're thinking about it, and there's the difference between male and female economists. Now, we've been down this road before. We last spoke in 2022.
We did.
Yeah, and this was your previous research. It's linked research, isn't it? Showing that female expert economists, they tended to be less willing to express a strong opinion. They were more cautious about their opinions. I think the conclusion that increased the perception of the maleness of economic experts, is that correct?
Yes. What we did, we looked at the opinions expressed by a well-known established panel of economists. So Chicago Booth Business School, they have a long established panel of economics experts. So a bunch of leading academic economists from the US and Europe agree to be on this panel. And they agree to give their opinions on a range of different policy topics every fortnight. What's kind of nice about that is that all these economists are asked to give their opinion, and then we can see how often will they respond and give their opinion, and do the male and female experts on the panel differ in terms of their confidence in their opinions and their willingness to give a strong opinion. So I should probably, by way of background, give a bit of detail about the nature of these opinions. It's quite structured in terms of the way they're asked their opinions. So essentially, given a statement about a topical issue. So for example, they've been asked about prospects for the dollar and what happens if the dollar declines. Mm-hmm. They're asked their opinion by being presented with a statement. So here it says, a sustained decline in the dollar's market share in the global economy will mean that US consumers are substantially worse off than they otherwise would be. So that's the statement. They see the statement and then they're asked to say, do they strongly agree with this statement? Do they agree with it? Are they uncertain about this statement? Do they disagree with this statement, or do they strongly disagree with their statement? So they have to answer in quite a structured way. It really is a subjective opinion, I think. You know, there's a lot of uncertainty about the potential effect in the decline in the dollar. They need to think through all the ways in which the decline in the dollar would impact on the economy. And then they also need to think about, will that make consumers worse off, and think about what that might mean. So there's not a single right or wrong answer. There may be a consensus among economists, but it's not a right or wrong answer to a sort of objective question. And some of the questions are even more subjective in terms of requiring, you know, is it a trade-off between, say, efficiency and equity? So they're asked for their opinion. They have to give their opinion in this specific form. We've thought about the types of opinions that the media would like. I remember speaking to a former colleague who editor of the FT. And he said, if you're asked to say something by the media, you should never say that you don't know or you're uncertain. So here, economists can say they're uncertain, and they may be right to say they're uncertain, but actually that's not going to help them get on the news or be asked to speak as an expert. So we were thinking about, well, let's think about who delivers those media opinions that the media want, who says agree or disagree, and who says strongly agree or strongly disagree. And what we found was that the female experts were less likely to give an opinion, to agree or disagree, and also less likely to strongly agree or strongly disagree. This is in line with findings in other areas. I think most people, if you ask them, would say, yeah, you know, women are less confident and less likely to speak up. I think what was quite striking about this is these women are, just like the men, they're leading academic economists. They're professors at Harvard, they're professors at Chicago, they're professors at the LSE. They're at the very top of the profession. Yet even these women, these super successful women who kind of made it in a male-dominated field, are less likely to give a strong opinion. So I thought that was quite striking. We found that female economists made up 22% of the panel, but only 15% of strong opinion. And so that suggests that strong voices are the ones that people hear. Women are underrepresented in the profession, or even more underrepresented in terms of the voices that you'd hear in public debate. We actually looked at which of them had appeared in the media, and that underrepresentation of the female voices was pretty similar. So just taking the US-based economists, the women are 20% of the panel, but they were 16% of the appearances in the media. It seemed that the finding could be generalized to how the public might see economists appearing in the media. And starting from a pretty low base, this lack of willingness of women to give their opinions, or perhaps I should say the greater willingness of men to give their opinions, would lead to male voices being even more present.
Speaking as a journalist, I have interviewed experts over many years in many different topics, and giving a strong opinion. That's the thing that you want to get. That's the thing you can write down. That's the thing you can make a story from. That is entirely true.
Yeah, whereas saying, actually, it's complicated, it's uncertain, it's the kind of harder thing to get across.
Yeah, which may be true, but I'm thinking, how do I make that into a story?
If this conversation is making you want to listen to Sarah talking to Tim about her previous paper, then that episode is called Male and Female Voices in Economics. It was published in June 2022.
You call that in the paper the supply side of opinion. This time round, you are looking at what you've called the demand side. What is the demand side? What interests you about it?
Yeah, so one reason why women may be less willing to give an opinion is because no one pays them any attention, right?
Right,
because
yes,
sort of the supply of opinion coming from experts, and then you think of the demand for opinions coming from the public.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there's something on the demand side which explains why women are less likely to give their opinion. If I think that no one's going to listen to me, then maybe I will be less likely to speak up. I think we were looking for explanations for why women might be less likely to speak up. And there is quite a lot of evidence that what we call stereotype discrimination against female experts, particularly in male-dominated fields. So, for example, we know that particularly male students rate female, particularly junior female academics, worse in terms of their teaching.
Right,
they're not giving equal authority to male and female lecturers. There was a study from the field of medicine showing that female doctors were more likely to have their opinions challenged. So if a patient was given advice by a female doctor, they were more likely to seek a second opinion than if they were giving the same advice by a male doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And also in the sphere of financial advice, the study showed that male advisors were more likely to have their recommendations acted on than female advisors. So there was this body of evidence which suggested that maybe that female experts would have less weight, that they would have less authority. And then we thought, well, maybe that would kind of provide some insight or possible explanation for why female experts were less likely to give their opinion.
When you set up the experiment to see the weight that people gave to economists' opinions, did you have a prior belief then in that case that the females would be more often unpersuasive?
Yeah, so we didn't know whether economists would be persuasive to start with. I think we thought it was likely that their voices or their opinions would carry some weight,
mm-hmm.
but we certainly expected the female experts to be less persuasive. Run the regression, you have your female indicator, and you're hoping to get a significant result. And the expectation was it would be negative and significant. We ran the regression and it was significant, which was great. But then realized that the coefficient was positive. It was the female experts who were actually more influential in terms of influencing public opinion.
And what do we know about the people who are being influenced, the sample that you've got here? This was in the US, isn't it? Do they look like America?
Yeah, pretty much. So we asked them to be kind of like be representative of the population in terms of gender. So we matched the 50-50 gender in terms of the people who are asked. I mean, it's an online survey, so they're a little bit more educated, a little bit more left-leaning. So in our analysis, we did reweight to make the sample representative of the wider US population, and the same result carried. So even if we reweighted our survey sample to be like the US population, it's still the case that the female experts were more influential. So it didn't seem to be a result that was particularly specific to our sample. One of the further analyses that we did, which was also quite surprising, was we broke the analysis down by the gender of the members of the public.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't just the case that the female experts were more influential on the opinions of the women in our survey. It was also that they were more influential on the opinions of the men in our survey. So it wasn't just that women listen to women and men listen to men. It was actually that the female experts were more influential in the eyes of everybody. So it's just to explain the way we conducted the experiment. So if you're survey respondent, you'd basically get the same opinion that experts had given their opinion on. You'd be asked for your opinion in the same way. And we just randomly show the opinion of one of the male experts from the panel and one of the female experts of the panel. We've matched them. So it would be the same opinion. So you'd see two economics professors, one male or one female, and they'd both be agreeing or they'd both be disagreeing or they'd both be uncertain. So in terms of their opinions, they're identical. We wanted to make gender quite salient. So we included the photos, right? So
yeah.
If you go to the Economist expert panel website, you can see photos of all the experts. Some people said, well, maybe the females just look friendlier. We tried to deal with that. We used ChatGPT to tell us what the photos were like. And
some were
more professional, some were less professional. So we tried to control for the characteristics of the photos. This Chicago panel really is drawn from a very small set of very elite US institutions. So Harvard, MIT, Yale, Princeton, Berkeley. So we could actually, in many cases, even control for the institution. So it could be like two professors from Harvard, one male, one female with the same opinion. So that was kind of quite nice. It didn't seem to be the institution. So there were quite a few things we're able to rule out. It seemed to be a positive female authority gap that we couldn't explain away with many different possible explanations.
And it wasn't that your experimental subjects were on to you and they're thinking, she's trying to make out that we're all sexists.
No, I mean, that's something that people worry about a lot when you run experiments. Did people think that we were trying to test for whether the expert gender mattered? But actually, in a follow-up survey, which I'll come on to, we actually asked, so at the end of the survey, at the end of the experiment, we asked the respondents to say what they thought we wanted to find out. So basically, at the start of the survey, we told them that we were interested in their opinions. They told us that they thought we were interested in their opinions. So they believed us. Only about 3 or 4% mentioned it's the identity of the expert or it's the gender of the expert that you're interested in. So there were a few that cottoned on to what we were trying to get at, but as I said, more than 95% didn't think that we were interested in understanding the effect of expert identity or the gender of the expert. So I don't think the result is due to this people giving us the answer they thought we wanted.
As you said, you followed this up with a slightly different experiment. What did you do?
We were looking for an explanation as to why female experts might have more authority. You know, in the context of all these other studies, which had shown that women tend to be discriminated against, why did we find a different result? We were told about this study that came out in the American Economic Review a few years ago, which offers some really interesting insights into dynamic effects of stereotype discrimination. So what do I mean by that? So stereotype discrimination is basically discrimination driven by stereotype beliefs about people. So I see an expert as being a man. So if I see a woman, I think she's less expert. And so I'll give her opinion less weight.
Mm-hmm.
This is kind of a stereotype belief. It's not like a true belief. If I have some information which challenges that stereotype, I could update that belief. So I might initially think that women are not going to be as expert. But if I hear a woman giving a really good opinion, or if I think that that woman is leading in her field, then I might think, maybe she is an expert. And so, you know, these stereotype beliefs can be updated over time. So they're not fixed forever. They can change as people are on the receiving end of examples which run counter to that stereotype. So that would suggest that the gap would close. Yes, you might go in there thinking that women are less expert. Over time, you might update your beliefs and think that women are just as good as men.
Mm-hmm.
But why would women be thought of as better than men?
Yes.
Well, that might be because, you know, say there's another group of people in the population. They don't hold these stereotype beliefs about women being less expert. But they know that there are some people who do have these stereotype beliefs about women being less expert. And so they know that in order to become a leading expert in a field where there is stereotype discrimination, the women have to work against this stereotype discrimination and so be even better than the men in order to reach the top of their profession.
Uh-huh.
It's like someone saying, wow, there's a female professor of economics at Harvard. She must be really, really good because this is a male-dominated field. She must be even better than the men in order to have made it to that position. So we kind of thought, well, maybe that's what's going on. Maybe the members of the public are saying, seeing an opinion from a woman who's a, you know, professor of economics at Harvard, she must be really good. Maybe they don't explicitly go through that process, but there's implicit subconscious thinking there. Obviously, there's one way to test that, which is what happens if you just don't tell members of the public that these are professors of economics at Harvard.
Yeah.
What we decided to do is to repeat the experiment. It was identical in every way, same opinion, same economist, but we removed the bit that said, this is Hilary Hoynes, this is Alan Auerbach, who's the professor of economics at Berkeley or wherever. So that was the only piece of information we removed. And if this theory was correct, then what we should see is this positive female authority gap should disappear. And yeah, that's exactly what happens. Women were no longer more authoritative. Quite a neat result. Another kind of explanation that people had suggested to us was, what if members of the public know that these women are less certain and less likely to give an opinion?
Yeah.
Is that what's going on? So I think we can rule that out in a number of ways. So first of all, you know, the fact that when we ran the second experiment and removed these credentials, that the authority gap went away. I think another aspect of the results that speaks against that explanation, that it's because the public thinks that women are naturally more uncertain, is that we tested all the different possible responses that the experts could give. So there were some topics on which the male and female experts were uncertain, some where they'd agree, some where they'd strongly agree. And we found that that positive female authority gap, that the members of the public were more likely to agree with the opinion of the expert when the opinion came from a female, that held across all those different possible responses. So the member of the public was more likely to give the same opinion as the female expert when she agreed, when she disagreed, and even when she said she was uncertain. So if you think that women are more likely to be uncertain, you wouldn't therefore be more likely to give the same response as the female expert when she is uncertain. I think what these results tell us is that these credentials or signals of expertise are actually really important in countering stereotype discrimination and even reversing it. If you see a woman who is very successful in a male-dominated field, maybe she's going to be seen as actually more authoritative than a male leader in the field. And yeah, there's a great book by Marianne Seagart, which I read as I was doing this, though it's called The Authority Gap.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about the negative base of the authority gap. So it's all about how women aren't listened to, how women are talked over, you know, how women in general seem to carry less authority. But even in that book, when you kind of read some of the stories and read some of the quotes, for the women at the top, they speak of how once they've made it to the top, their experience is very different. Helle Thorning-Schmidt, who is former Prime Minister of Denmark, says, there's a world of difference between getting to the top and being at the top and how I was treated as a woman. That's a nice corroboration of our story coming from someone who's been through that. It's because it was a struggle getting to the top that people give you so much respect, you know, now you're there. I think what has been interesting is reflecting on the recent experience that Rachel Reeves has had. As we were publishing this, we've got the first female Chancellor of the Exchequer, Rachel Reeves. She herself has said she's always felt that she's had to be better than the men when she's been working in a very male-dominated field. She's had a terrible time and the media have not shown her very much respect.
Let's talk about this woman here. This is Rachel from Accounts.
They've described her as, I think they called her Rachel from Accounts, which is, you know, really, really offensive.
And somehow she's ended up in charge of the UK economy.
The more I thought about it, I think the way the media have been treating her is in every way they're trying to chip at her expertise and chip at her credentials.
Her CV is not as anywhere as good as it she makes out.
Rachel Reeves has a MSc in economics from the London School of Economics. In terms of her economics qualifications, she's the best qualified chancellor we've had in the last 10 chancellors. She worked at the Bank of England, and the media are kind of challenging her credentials. It's been pointed out that she didn't work as an economist at the Bank of England. She was just working at the Bank of England.
Mm.
And they've been saying, oh, you know, she doesn't have the economic credentials that she's claiming. And the Rachel from Accounts, it's diminishing her qualifications as an economist. And you think, well, that makes sense, right? If qualifications signal expertise and give women authority, then how do you undermine senior women? Well, you basically chip away at their credentials. You basically say, you're not as qualified as you claim, you know. So what they're doing is trying to undermine the very thing that gives women authority in male-dominated fields. In terms of how our research relates to what's happening to her, I do think there's a bit of a connection there.
Nevertheless, Sarah, we can take quite a lot of good news from your story, can't we? Because there is no version of your experiment in which the female experts were rated worse than the male experts.
I agree. You know, as I said, we were expecting, you know, there to be a negative authority gap, and we found a positive authority gap. For the women who were asked, you know, when they're asked to appear in the media, they should say yes, because the public is listening. You know, hopefully that is encouraging in terms of women becoming more visible in the media. And the other thing that it made me reflect on is how to try and get rid of that stereotype discrimination against juniors. There's nothing in our study which says that there isn't discrimination against more junior colleagues. And I think in university education, we're always trying to be friendly and be on first name terms. And I actually thought, no, junior female academics should always insist on being called doctor. The men should insist on being called doctor as well, you know, just to kind of level the playing field. But we need to be signalling our credentials. Sadly, we shouldn't have to, but if there is stereotype discrimination, then at least it suggests that presenting your credentials can help to maybe reduce some of that.
Very interesting, Professor Smith, and I know that you've earned that. Thank you very much for talking about it today.
No problem. Very nice to chat to you, Tim. Thank you very much.
The paper is called Do Female Experts Face an Authority Gap? Evidence from Economics. And the authors, Hans Sivertsen and Sarah Smith.
Next week on Vox Talks Economics, discovering meaning at work.